real then, postpartum depression and anxiety?
Yeah, I think it's real. I mean, obviously there's a spectrum in terms of the severity of postpartum depression. So it can be something from mild and it can go all the way to much more severe kinds of postpartum depression or anxiety, which can lead people to need to be hospitalized. And across that diversity in terms of how people are presenting, how mothers are presenting, there's different sorts of interventions that you may use. I mean, for many women, maybe in the sort of mild to moderate, talk therapy and actually exercise, which is in itself, I laugh when I say that because I know what it's like with time pressure, but we know that there's actually like a dose response kind of relationship with mood and exercise. I actually did my dissertation on that. So I'm aware that if we can get people moving, we can actually improve mood, and we have all sorts of hormones and things that can be at play there. But I also think that part of it is also that when we have movement in our body, it allows us to complete stress cycles as well that we otherwise may not be completing. So if we aren't getting enough movement, whether that's in exercise or dancing or yoga or whatever it is that you're doing, we may be actually holding stress in our body. And through that movement, it actually allows us to process that and to dissipate some of that energy as well. So yeah, I mean, postpartum depression is real, but recently I had that post. The thing I was getting at there is that I think that when we just talk about it as postpartum depression, okay, there's a chemical imbalance or something. If we talk about it simply from that perspective, we're missing a really big part of the picture, which is actually what is happening in the life of that woman. What does she have the supports? Like, what kind of expectations does she have around motherhood? Is she trying to live up to this perfect mothering ideology? Does she have people around her that really provide her the safety and support that she really needs? And I think that when we look at it simply from a biological perspective, it's also easy to end up, I guess, looking at mothers as though there's a failure in them for having actually experienced depression. And especially because, you know, for me, I really like to look at patriarchy and the impact that that has on our experiences of mothering. And so I also feel that when we pathologize a lot of these emotional experiences that mothers have, it's a way of blaming mothers and not requiring our culture and our society to actually change to improve the conditions for them so they don't have these experiences. You know, I was thinking about it the other day because I actually just finished reading Mom Rage, which is, I'm going to forget her name now, Mina Dubin, I think is her name. And I was just thinking to myself after finishing reading, I was so revved up, and I thought, there's so many reasons to look after mothers, even if you think of it from an economic perspective, right? Or you think about it in terms of safety levels in our community. It's like the preventative medicine for so many things that go wrong in our culture. So it doesn't make sense, but it does make sense in a patriarchal system, because a patriarchal system only works when there is an imbalance of power, where there is one gender that is dominating. And in order for them to dominate, there needs to be subjugation of women in this case, you know? And so, yeah, it's very frustrating. Very frustrating.
If someone listening is experiencing, whether they've got that label, you know, from a medical professional or not, if they're experiencing what they feel like is postpartum depression or anxiety, or perhaps like me, they're looking back on that experience, what would you want them to know?
I want them to know that there is nothing wrong with them for having that experience or for looking back. And in fact, Zoe, I so relate to that because I think back to times when my baby woke every hour, sometimes every half hour, all night long. I don't even know how I was alive. I don't know how I was continuing to go on. And there were some really low periods for me during that too. And so I want women to know, mothers to know that there's nothing wrong with them and there is no failure in seeking support, and that it is completely reasonable for them to have that experience given the amount of load that is on women today in modern kind of motherhood. There is so much load on us, mental load, actual physical labor load, emotional load. Like, there is so much for us to be across. It makes complete sense that people actually can't keep up with it, that they don't actually have the resources required in order to not experience postpartum depression. Of course, not everyone is going to have that. But I think that when we do have that, it's a symptom of the entire system, right? And the way that that works or doesn't work, rather, for mothers. And I would also say, whether you identify it as postpartum depression or anxiety, or if you just don't feel right, you just don't feel like yourself, you just can't, you know, you don't feel happy, or you feel really dissatisfied in some way with your experience of mothering, I would just say, just go and get help. Like, you don't need to be at the point where you have to be admitted in order to get help, right? Like, you can get help at any part of that spectrum. And the earlier you get help, the less likely you are to end up more along that place, which is more severe, and that sooner you will be able to actually enjoy the experience more, right? So I think that that's what I would really love people to know. And also, just because we are talking about the kind of, you know, whether it's coming from a medical professional or not, I think that it's completely reasonable to use any resource that exists to get through postpartum depression or postpartum anxiety. So whether that's talk therapy, whether you're getting involved in somatic practices, or whether you're using medication, all of these things exist to you, and it's important to use what works for you. But of course, being a psychologist, would always say that talk therapy is really, really important, because even though we may be able to manage symptoms with medication, it's not going to take away the circumstances, right, in your day-to-day life that may have also influenced an experience of depression or anxiety. So I do think that talk therapy and working through that stuff is so important as well.
And tell me about your early experiences. So you mentioned that you reflect back. What was it like for you? Would you say you had postpartum depression or anxiety?
Yeah, it's hard to know. I mean, I've definitely had periods of time where I have felt like, am I okay? Am I coping? Do I need to go and see a GP? Do I need to maybe use antidepressants? I have had those thoughts, absolutely. I would say that my own personal experience is that maybe 2 years into having my first son, I started to really consciously track my cycle. And for me, I actually started to notice that it was actually aligned with certain parts of my cycle. And so that's also something that would be really wonderful for people to actually track, because I had never tracked my cycle before that. And so being able to identify that it happened at a certain point in my cycle meant that when it was happening, I could remind myself that, okay, this is where I'm at in the cycle. This is what happens when that is going on, and I know that it isn't going to last. Still to this day, I still experience that. It tends to be more around just frustration now, because I have children who sleep all night long, and, you know, I have much more time to engage in my own pursuits and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, my own experience of motherhood, my son is 7 now and my daughter is 5, and I went into motherhood or becoming a mother very naive, which almost feels embarrassing to say because of the work that I do. But I went in very naive. I spent a lot of time and energy researching birth and labor and being really informed about all of that and being very clear about what I wanted in that. And I guess maybe thinking about parenting, like the actual type of parent maybe, but I really didn't spend a lot of time thinking about what was going to happen to me as an individual. Like, where was Yara going to go? Who was she going to be? How was I going to give space to and honor my own transition into this new entity, into this new being? I really didn't spend much time doing that. And I think also, once I was kind of in it, I also was kind of the opinion early on that I'd get through that real intense time and then I'd go back to being me. And what I've come to understand now is that I'll never go back to that person. You know, there are elements of her still with me, but I'm a totally new iteration of myself. And I've really come to love that. And there's a real curiosity about who this new person is and excitement about what might she be into now. You know, like, there's this really beautiful thing, but that was really scary for a long period of time. And for me, I think part of, I don't know, the surrender or releasing of that came from a better understanding around, again, elements of the patriarchy, which is kind of saying to mothers, to be doing it right, you should bounce back in some way. Like, you shouldn't change. You should still be the same person. You should still be able to uphold your relationships in the same way. And, you know, for me, my married relationship should stay the same, all of that sort of thing. And I've had to really embrace that actually I'm just a completely different person, And everybody else has to get used to that too, right? Like, because that's the other thing, right? Sometimes people can be like, you've changed, you know? It's like, yeah. And I'm actually really proud of that. I'm proud of that. So I guess for me, coming to understand that it wasn't just a baby that was being born, it was actually a whole new version of me that was being born in that day as well. And so identity stuff was huge for me, like massive, massive, massive. And then also relationship stuff, that was pretty big for me as well. And actually, I would say the relationship stuff is probably what set me on this course of doing the work that I do now, because I started to look at, why didn't anyone tell me this was going to happen to my relationship, and what is out there in terms of supporting people to be prepared for that transition as a couple? Because it's one thing to prepare even individually, but actually as a couple, it's just, it's completely different, you know, what your relationship looks like after having a baby. So that was just massive, just so, so massive. And again, you know, as I mentioned sort of earlier, I think my son didn't really sleep through the night until my daughter came along and a bit after. So maybe about 3. And I reckon from about 8 to 10 months until about 2, he woke every hour and a half. We'd be at the beach at 4 o'clock in the morning eating Weet-Bix out of a plastic container, you know, because I had to get out of the house. I couldn't stay, you know, and I'd be walking, walking, walking everywhere with a pram. So that was really hard. That was its own journey as well in terms of accepting that his sleep was what it was and that he wasn't a bad baby. There actually was nothing that I could do to change that either. So it was kind of like, how do I adjust my life in order to be able to still get through this extreme sleep deprivation? And like I said, now he sleeps in the morning and I have to get him up to get to school on time. So it's just like, you know, really weird. And thankfully when my daughter came, she was a much better sleeper, much better breastfeeder. Like I had so many worries having a second baby, thinking, oh God, the Russian roulette, what's going to happen next? But actually she just was a different baby. She was easier in some ways and other ways not so much. But yeah, it was intense. It was very intense.